cliffcentral.com.
Dr. John Tuban is he's a medical doctor. He is currently involved in speaking and training. He has an incredible life story, and I thought it would be fun to catch up with him. And he's sitting right opposite me now, looking extremely smart. You look like you've got a good grip on life, my friend.
So far so good, eh?
Are you happy, John?
It's by God's grace. I'm happy. Yeah. You know, happiness comes from within. So even though the outside may be a chamor sometimes, but, you always visit your inside and then you get a dose of happiness, yeah.
I don't think your outside's a chamor. I think you're a pretty organized guy, right?
I'm doing my best, yeah.
Now, you started off, like a lot of people who are intelligent, either your parents or your teachers or your friends or you yourself thought, I have a brain, I'm going to become a doctor. That often happens, right?
It does, yeah. In my case, though, it was the first two.
Your parents and your teachers?
Yeah, especially my teachers. They said, John, go make us proud and become a medical doctor. And guess what? I made them proud, but I never made me proud.
Isn't that interesting? No, first of all, isn't it fascinating how we consider whenever anyone is smart, they must become a doctor?
Yeah.
When there are plenty of other occupations and professions that would benefit from their great brains.
Absolutely, absolutely.
But they end up working on someone's insides or something, you know? Mm. That's a mistake.
Yeah, it's a big error in human development.
And then you made these people happy, but you didn't make yourself happy, which is the second problem.
Yeah. So I had to drag myself to work every day, knowing that I'm going to make lots of money, especially on Mondays for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
You know, going to that surgery to see lots of people making lots of cash, but not being the happiest man.
Was it something that you anticipated from the beginning, that this was what medicine really was? Because the practical world of medicine isn't like in the TV shows.
No, it's not. Even though there was an element of me enjoying it a bit, but I think the gift within me, which is to speak and inspire people, was greater than the benefits of being a medical doctor, living a wonderful life, staying in suburbs, driving 4 German cars in your first year of being a GP.
Wow.
During those days, you know, 1990, 1991, you know, as GPs were making lots of money because medical aides were paying with their eyes closed, unlike now.
Oh, yeah, that's true. You got out at the right time.
Huh? Yeah.
Now, what made you change that lifestyle? Because it's very easy to get into a comfort zone, and I know this, and most people who've had a change in their career at some point will be able to tell you when that moment occurred where they thought, actually, I've got to pursue what I really want to do, not do the safe stuff.
Mm-hmm.
When did that happen for you?
Well, one day I was in my medical practice. A woman came in. She complained of abdominal pains. When she walked in, she sat there. I started spending almost an hour with her on how to write down her vision, how to set goals, etc. And after an hour, she asked to go to the bathroom. And when she went to the bathroom, my PA came in and said, the queue outside is very long. And I realized that I'm doing the right thing, but at the wrong place.
And by the way, did you cure her stomach problem as well?
Well, I did. Thereafter, I did. But it was... Thereafter, I did. But the people were upset outside because I was spending too much time with one person not doing the medical thing, but doing the talking thing.
It is obviously something that comes naturally to you, sitting there talking to people about their vision, their dreams, helping people work out their own life.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to really care about people to have those conversations.
No, absolutely.
You didn't know this woman.
I didn't know this woman. But when she came in and she told me that she works at a certain hypermarket for 20 years and she's about to retire, but she does not know where she's going to go to, then I felt it's an opportunity for me to help her figure out her future, which had nothing to do with her medical problem.
And does this give you, when you see people being able to discover that part of themselves, does that give you huge joy and happiness?
Great
and satisfaction?
Great fulfillment. In fact, I truly believe that I'm here on earth to help people become the people they were born to become. And to see someone getting better, literally transforming in front of you, becoming happier than they were, that is my greatest joy.
But you know what, John? I can't stop thinking about the fact that they're only... Especially in the 90s, there were only so many black doctors.
Mm-hmm.
There really weren't a lot.
No, not at all.
There was a huge community of of black people who probably would have rather been treated by a black doctor anyway, mm-hmm. just because they would have spoken the language.
Yeah, that's
you
right.
You know, you kind of understand the family influences and cultural and all that kind of thing comes into it. But, you know, you might have had a really important role to play there, but you saw something else.
Yeah, it was a great role because I was in Mamelodi and there were only four doctors in the whole of the township when I started.
By the way, you support Sundowns?
Chiefs, but let's not talk about that now. Okay.
Yeah. Wow.
All right.
What a disaster you are. But were your family and friends, did they think you'd lost your mind?
They did. They actually thought that I was out of my mind. And then I told them, yes, you're right. I'm out of my old mind. I'm now in my new mind.
What were you reading? What were your influences at this stage? That
during that time, the greatest influence was Dr. Miles Monroe, whom I even visited in the Bahamas before I left medical practice, just to be comfortable that the thing that I want to pursue will work. Dr. David Molapo, who, when I left medical practice, actually worked with him for 2 years at the ICANN Foundation in preparation for me to start my own company.
Dr. David Molapo, I know the name and I know him by reputation. He must have been an interesting guy too.
Yeah, extremely interesting.
To learn from.
Yeah, absolutely. And I worked with him for 2 years just to get acclimatized to this industry of speaking, because all my years I spent them seeing sick people. Then, you know, the corporate world didn't know about John Devane. So I needed to work with someone who was already in the industry for many years.
Are there moments where you still think that there might be any kind of room for you to go back into medicine, or is that definitely in your past?
I'm too busy with my papers now. Well, because I call this my occupation. Medical practice was my preoccupation, preparing me for my occupation. So now I'm fully occupied with my occupation. I know that's nonsense, but that's, you know.
No, absolutely. I'm too busy. A good way of looking at it.
Yeah, that's right, yes.
And usually a preoccupation is a distraction.
Absolutely.
And in this case, medicine is your distraction.
Absolutely.
Okay, so how does it work? Do you do one-on-one sessions with people, or do you address huge groups of people? Because there are different kinds of speakers, there are different kinds of people in the training and speaking environment.
Yeah.
How do you do
when I started, it was largely talking to groups of people. But now it's a mix. So I talk to groups. I also do one-on-one coaching. So as I have developed, started as a motivational speaker, but more now I focus on leadership. So I'm more of a leadership development consultant, dealing with groups of people, whether small or big.
People need sometimes just a helping hand. Sometimes they need one tiny idea that will spark something. Yep. Sometimes they need constant confidence boosters. Mm-hmm. There are different reasons people go to these seminars sessions, right?
Yeah.
Can you identify when someone says hello to you what they're probably there for?
It's not easy to tell, because many people can always camouflage. They can present something, a face that has nothing to do with what's on their inside. But until you do more a one-on-one session, then you can actually truly discover what their real issue is.
So what kind of people usually come to you, and what have you done for them? I mean, give me the down low on this.
Yeah. The majority of people, because I made a transformation from being a medical practitioner to my career of being a motivational speaker, trainer, consultant, most people who are leaving their jobs in order to start a business, they normally come to me because they think I've got some magic, and I don't, but I can at least advise them. On what things they must focus on if you move from one occupation to another occupation.
So that's usually because they regard you as an expert in that.
They regard me as an expert, but also...
You've done it yourself.
I've done it myself, yeah. But also in companies where they invite you to go and speak to a large crowd, to employees who are demotivated, people can pick up what is really your strong point. And then following that, they can actually say, can you help me with this, whether it's relationships, whether it's strategy or any other thing, or just organizing my life. So those are the kinds of one-on-one coaching sessions that I do.
Do you get people from all walks of life there? Are we talking about important political leaders right down to a woman in a supermarket who doesn't know what to do
political
with
their life. Leaders, no. But captains of industry like CEOs and MDs.
Was that because political managers, leaders think they've got it all figured out?
I think so. And I think very soon, though, they will learn like that they need help too.
They probably need the most
help. But it's really a mixed multitude from students to employees to, you know, captains of industry. Yeah.
Do you think South Africans are healthy mentally? Forget about our physical condition, but do you think we're healthy mentally? I feel like sometimes we jump from thinking where everything's gone to hell in a handbasket and then to the other side where we are euphoric about how great it is.
Yeah.
We don't seem to have a middle ground.
I think we are a crazy nation.
Mm-hmm.
A nation that comes from a past which is real. But also there is a promised land, but I think we are still in the desert. You know, if you take the metaphor of a nation that was captured, say, in Egypt, but going to Canaan, you know.
Yeah.
But then if we are in the desert, there's a false sense of freedom. But it's not really true, because for me, freedom is two-sided. You are free from, but you must be free to.
Explain that to me.
So the fact that you are free from the hand of the oppressor,
yeah,
it doesn't mean you are already in the promised land.
Right. You still have to be free to do the things you
want to do. To do the things.
Right.
So we are free from being blocked from creating wealth, but we are not free to create wealth because we are still oppressed mentally.
It's that whole Bob Marley emancipate yourself
right.
from mental
Absolutely.
Slavery line.
Yes, yeah. So many of us now who were oppressed by the oppressor, even when the oppressor is lifted up his hand, the oppression continues, but now it's perpetuated by yourself.
Self-imposed.
Absolutely.
Thing.
So, and I think that is the challenge.
Do you feel that for black South Africans,
yep.
that's an easy thing to break out of? I mean, particularly for people who feel very victimized, who legitimately
yeah.
are very cut up about maybe their own personal circumstances, poverty,
yeah.
Disease, because you know that in this country, you know better than most because you're a medical doctor too. The challenges of people just being able to find enough food
yeah.
for their children is in very many yeah. families the reality.
Mm.
Do you feel that emancipation from mental slavery is not just one bridge too far for some people? I mean, a lot of people complain that it's just impossible.
Yeah. And yet it is possible, but it will take a while. And I think the slavery mentality is bad, bad, bad news. So much so that you'll find that actually, you know, it's more on black-on-black oppression now. Let me give a simple example. If a black person was a waiter in a restaurant
mm-hmm.
and he regarded himself as a slave, and this slave was trained to serve a master, which is a whitey. All his life, he was trained to serve the master. Then the so-called freedom comes.
Yeah.
Then me, the black person, walks into that restaurant. This black waiter will drag his feet to come and serve me because I look like him. I'm also a slave. He was never trained to serve a slave. And when a whitey walks in, he runs. So even though he loves me, but he loves me as a core slave.
No,
are you with me? So,
I do,
you go
you
to it's... Home Affairs, you go to whatever, even it's the black government ruling, but we treat one another like monkeys.
Well, you can say it.
So a whitey can call me a monkey, but a fellow black actually literally treats me like a monkey. So for me, it's more painful to be treated like one rather than to be called one. Does that make sense?
It makes sense to
yes.
me, but it is a very difficult thing to articulate.
Yes.
I think you've explained it as well as it's possible to do.
Yeah.
But there is, I mean, there's got to be a way out of this because
yeah.
we can't allow these sorts of inherited, and a lot of this is just as a direct
yeah.
result of,
That's right, yeah.
of an oppression of mind.
Yes.
But we can't carry on like
That's
this.
Right.
How do we break people out who are
Definitely,
shuffling their feet?
Definitely, there is a way out of it, and I'm sure it must be a multifaceted approach. But one of that would be leadership. because no country, no generation, no organization can rise above the level of its leadership. When you see a country going down the drain, it is simply responding to the mediocrity of its leadership. And when you see it going up, it is responding to the excellence of its leadership. And I mean, history has endorsed that. We have seen even this very country, when it was led by so-and-so, it took a certain direction. When it is led by another person, it takes another direction. So leadership is critical. Even in organizations, we see that. So it's not only leadership, but leadership, for me, it's key.
So do you help people to become leaders in their own lives?
I do my best, yeah. It's one of the things that I do when I do executive coaching and helping people to truly become the people they were born to be. Because in my mind, being a leader means being best in your area of influence. If you become best in your area of influence, everybody else should follow you when it comes to your area of influence. I always say that all of us were born to become leaders, even though we don't all become leaders, but all of us were born to become leaders. Now, when I say that, people would say, but if all of us were born to become leaders, who are going
Who's
to be the followers?
Yeah.
And that's a wrong question to ask, because that question suggests that you think that followers can follow other followers. So if I say everybody can become a leader, a cleaner can become a leader. Imagine a cleaner cleans the floors beautifully, and the CEO comes in and say, cleaner, how did you make the floors to shine so beautifully? And the cleaner says, CEO, please take a chair. Let me give you a 15-minute lecture on how to clean the floors. The cleaner is being a leader when it comes to cleaning, and the CEO follows the cleaner with regards to cleaning.
But you know what? What you just said now made me think. Like this obsession we have with putting smart people into medical school.
Yeah.
It's also an obsession with office bearing. A title, a job title, CEO, president, boss, you know, all of those things. That in South Africa is too important.
That's just your occupation.
Up. Yeah. Right?
It's like when you go to a school where you have a great mathematics teacher who's doing extremely well, he's got long service, then you promote him to become a principal. You have just lost a mathematics teacher.
Yeah.
And he's not an institutional manager. He messes up as a principal of a school. So we don't have a math teacher. We also don't have a principal practically.
Yeah.
So what we should have done was to increase his salary where he is, pay him for his performance, rather than to give him a position so that he can qualify for a greater salary. And I think that's an error. So in a normal, an ideal situation, we should find a great mathematics teacher who's getting paid more than a school principal if he's performing in his role than a principal is performing in his or her
role. I like this. Shouldn't you be the Minister of Finance or something? I mean, this sounds to me like a sensible way to go.
Yeah, so titles have messed us up.
Yeah.
And that is a problem, yeah.
I also think, you know, apart from race, from job titles, from all of those things, the other thing that makes it difficult to be South African is that we're not always honest with each other.
Yeah.
People often want to project an image of wealth and success when they're not successful and they're worried and they have bonds
stressed
to pay.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
You know, and they may be driving a fancy car and they may have all the fancy stuff that shows people that they're wealthy.
Yeah.
But actually they're so worried that the bank's going to come and take everything away the next day. They don't sleep properly.
Yeah. And we show off all the time. You know, like I said, you know, when I started medical practice then, the first 6 months, I already had two big German cars. By the end of the first year, I already had four German cars, literally.
Wow.
Now, it's the reason being, you know, the GP in the community, you must show that you are up there. Everybody looks up to you. And society also does not make it easy for you because they also expect these things. So, and even now, when things are tough for most medical practitioners, as an example, they are still trying to look like that. But actually, it's very tough to look like that.
They might not own one of those cars, right?
Yes, absolutely.
They belong to the bank.
Yeah.
But I also think there are a lot of white people who try to look like they are doing well. And then they give that impression, and a lot of black people go, oh, well, all white people have money, which is also not true.
Yeah, yeah.
Just as most black people in the townships are not all impoverished.
Yeah, absolutely.
There are big, expensive houses in the townships.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. And people have got cash, liquid cash. in the bank account, and as opposed to those who may be in a suburb where
right.
there's nothing in the bank except you've got a big house which is also not yours and a big car which is also not yours. So, yeah.
So what does money mean to you? I mean, is it an expression of value or is it just a reward for good service?
I think for me, money, it's a necessary tool that I use to finance my habits. And if money is in the hands of a good person, the good person will use the money to finance his good habits. When it is in the hands of a bad person, the bad person will also use the money to finance his bad habits. So money is neutral. It's a necessary tool because we really cannot fully express ourselves without things. But for us to get the things, we need the money to buy the things with.
Absolutely. Now, I was looking at your history, and you're a Shangaan guy.
Yeah, Shangaan.
You grew up in Swaziland.
In though. A village, in South Africa, but in a section in Mpumalanga closer to Swaziland. So it's a Swazi village.
So did you grow up speaking Swati and Shangaan?
It was Shangaan. In the village, it was Swazi. And in school, it was Zulu.
Because you went to a Zulu school. So yeah,
then I married a Tswana girl.
Oh my.
Then I produced mixed Masala children.
Oh my God. What a mess.
What a chamorro. Yes.
But I mean, actually, exposing yourself to all of that enriches you.
Oh, it does. Absolutely.
Because they're cultural purists, but I don't think they get ahead of the game.
Yeah. Yeah. So that has helped me a lot because then basically I was exposed to both the Nguni language, which is Zulu, Swazi, and then Xhosa and the Bell.
Yeah.
Okay, so that I'm sorted.
Yeah.
Then the Shangaan side, which is my home language, then links me to a bit of Venda. I'm sorted. Then getting married to a Tswana, which is a Sotho thing. So both Tswana and, you know,
Sotho,
Pedi and Southern Sotho, I'm sorted.
Yeah, you pretty much cover it all.
Yeah.
Now, all you need is like a one of your children to marry a boer.
That's right.
And you'll be sorted, right?
Absolutely.
And you'll have everything.
Yeah, because of our attitude then, my Afrikaans is bad news because during those days, we literally like hated Afrikaans, you know, which is sad because I wish I didn't hate it so much because whether we like it or not, South Africa still has companies that are led by Afrikaner. And if you understand Afrikaans, what a blessing to sit down with a CEO of a company who is more Afrikaans, and then you can have a good conversation when you're coaching that person. So that's my loss on the African side.
Is it better or worse right now? I mean, the president fired our finance minister a while ago, and I think there are a lot of people with more questions and more insecurities than ever. You know, that there's the international climate, which is not easy at the moment. Mm-hmm. But there's our own. We've made some of our own missteps here.
Yeah, yeah.
And we have to deal with this.
Mm-hmm.
Are a lot more people coming to you and saying, listen, John, I don't know what the hell to do. It feels like all around me, I just see negativity and pessimism.
Mm.
Do you have to fight that all the time?
Yeah, there are two sides of this because you said, is it better now? Obviously, it is better in many ways. We've got better roads today than we had before.
Yeah.
But the challenge is that as these other things get better, as humans, we also have got high expectations.
Yes.
Especially to be cared for and to be led properly. Now, unfortunately, that is not meeting our expectations. So it's like when you take your child to a good school, your need today is that the child must be educated. But you have an expectation, which is the child must be safe. So now we have created expectations that we are not meeting. And I think we are getting disappointed by leadership over and over and over and over again. In other words, we have a lot. We've got great resources, etc. But we are not managing these things. And that is why many people are frustrated. We should be far much better than Nigeria, than in many more other countries. But we're not necessarily better, even though we've got the natural resources.
And we've got the people. And we've got the people. We've got great ideas.
Absolutely. Huh. I mean, people in the streets, they are doing their best to do business, whatever. But if the laws that are set by politicians are not well established to protect an entrepreneur and to create a space for those who are highly productive people to become more productive, then it's a discouragement to people who are doing their best to make it in South Africa.
What was the best part of... Because I don't think you can just leave your work at home now. I mean, leave your work at work and go home.
Yeah.
Because you're thinking about these things all the time, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And with medicine, you just leave the patient and
That's
you can
right.
move on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you miss not being able to disengage like that?
Do I do what?
Do you miss not being able to just disengage, to just leave your patients at work like you used to when you were a doctor?
Yeah, because that disengagement is part of something that I really don't miss. So I even forget about it. But you're right. This kind of work that I'm doing now, you carry these things with you. Even when you go home, you just feel that people are doing their best, but they are probably not well managed at work. Maybe the person you're dealing with is just not a good leader, etc. So it stays with you.
Now, you've got three sons.
Yeah.
You have to be a brave man to have three sons.
I tell you, eh?
And they're all bringing women home? How old are they now?
The firstborn is 22 years of age. He's studying somewhere in Italy.
Wow.
There's an American university
called John
Cabot. He's studying international business.
Wow.
Yeah, so he's studying there, doing his fourth year this year. When he finishes, he wants to go and do master's in Argentina. You know, the whole idea that he's doing an international business degree.
It's amazing.
He wants to be exposed all over. Then the second born is at UJ, doing his second year there, doing logistics. And then the third born is in Form 2. We still call it Form 2 at St. Albans.
So you're still a Pretoria guy, huh?
Yeah, I studied there, I got married there, and I'm staying there, and I think I will die there.
Yeah, I'm a Pretoria guy as well.
Yeah,
so
it's a very nice place. Yeah,
it's special.
Yeah, you come to Joburg to make the money, but go spend it back in Pretoria.
Well, listen, I mean, you're a very inspiring guy.
No, thank you so much.
I
appreciate that. Yeah.
I think we can all learn quite a lot from your story, and I think that we've got to all follow our dreams, if there's any lesson in this.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, we've all got to do what you did.
Yeah.
Even if you're doing tremendously well somewhere, there's probably somewhere you can do even more.
Much better and be fulfilled. Even the pest may be less, even though in my case, I thank God that when it comes to the issue of the pest, it's not really an issue.
No, you're probably making more money now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you're good at what you do,
and
right?
And more relaxed as well, and you travel the world.
Yes.
You see, if I was in my practice, I would never meet you. I would just read about you.
Well, unless I had some problem with my liver or something.
That's right, after taking lots of Johnny Walker or something.
Listen, John, it's a pleasure to meet you.
No, thank you so much.
Thanks for coming to talk to us.
It's a great honor. Thank you. And congratulations for this, what you're doing here. It's an awesome...
I
even tweeted here that when I've just walked into Cliff Central Studios, what a refreshing...
Just be careful on Twitter, eh?
Yeah, well...
Dangerous place.
Yeah, but I... Yeah, you never know, eh?
Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you so much.
Dr. John Tiban.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Pleasure. CliffCentral.com.
That was Dr. John. Sorry.
What an interesting man and an interesting story. Gives up, all those years that he invested in studying medicine to do what he really loves, which is just going around and speaking to people, motivating them.
And it's so true. When someone who's gone through the conventional path of, well, now you're a successful doctor and you're meant to buy, you're meant to drive a certain car, a year into his practice, he was now, he owned like all these four big expensive cars. And he was actually,
bringing me zero joy.
Exactly. It's not about that. And so he's now really focusing on what truly matters. So that's cool.
Yeah. You don't hear that side of the story, do you?
Mm-mm.
Anyway, guys, into the last half hour we go. The show has really flown by today. If you missed the Justice Malala burning platform brought to you by Nando's, wow, was it burning up today. It was a full hour.
Yeah.
And it needed to be.
It's a bumper edition of notes.
It needed to be. Right. So the Colcaccio Pizzeria family has grown, and their three new stores have recently opened in convenient locations in and around Johannesburg. Dane Fern Square, Mall of the South, and the latest addition is Gold Reef City. If you're in the area, be sure to pop in for a slice of the goodness, Colcaccio Pizzeria. They're the reason you crave pizza.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We were talking about St. Patrick's Day earlier, right? Because it is St. Patrick's Day.
Indeed, yeah.
So I think it is Jimmy Kimmel, is it? Or Fallon, or Kimmel. Which one of the Jimmys is it?
Fallon.
I never get them right.
Kimmel has a bit of a lisp, and he is in Los Angeles, and Fallon is all about that YouTube life, and he's based in New York.
Okay, well, it's one of the Jimmys, right? Talking about St. Patrick's Day.
It's Fallon.
Tonight we'll be taking a look at the pros and cons of celebrating St. Patrick's Day. Oh. Today's the day. Everyone's out having fun. They're partying it up. I love it. Nevertheless, let's take a look at the pros and cons of celebrating St. Patrick's Day. Here we go. Pro, it's a day to celebrate the life of the Irish. Con, and the death of the liver. It's very interesting, yeah. Liver's overrated.
Yeah. Livers, you don't need it.
Pro, it's about much more than drinking. Con, it's about drinking much more. You see what he's saying?
That's a pro. That's the point.
Pro, St. Patrick drove the snakes out of Ireland. Con, and onto Samuel L. Jackson's plane. That is it. Get these mother effing snakes,
or we're gonna land in Schitt's Creek.
No. You have to. You can't just say it, I gotta show it.
Oh, yeah, you gotta show it. It's the name of a town.
I know it is.
Yeah.
Pro, seeing men in kilts walk the streets. Con, seeing them stand over a windy subway grate like Marilyn Monroe, like.
Happy birthday!
7 year itch, no
less. Happy birthday!
You okay?
Happy birthday!
Happy birthday!
Pro, you can go to an Irish pub and try authentic Irish cuisine. Con, or you can just stay at home and boil a sock. I mean, that's not the greatest food. I'm Irish. I can
greatest
say
people.
I can say that.
Hey,
yeah.
I can't say it.
I like
you
it.
Can say it.
What is it that you got here? I'll make it. What is it?
What do you mean?
What do you have there? I'll turn it into Irish food. What type of protein? What do you have there?
I got a potato.
Oh, I'll boil it.
Okay.
What else steak. You got? What's that?
Steak. Filet yeah. mignon.
No, you got just like
oh,
corned beef.
Cabbage.
Oh yeah, just boil it.
What else you got beef. There?
What's that?
Corned beef.
Corned beef. I got a great idea.
What?
Have you tried boiling it?
Where do you live? What's that?
What was it like? Oatmeal.
Yeah, let's
you
boil it.
Boil it. You take the egg, you boil it, and you take the oatmeal, you boil it, the corned beef, you boil it, and the cabbage, and you boil it.
What town are you from?
Schitt's Creek is where I'm from. There you go.
Oh, I was up there without a paddle. I was up there without a paddy.
Yeah, you did. You did. Oh, I just came back from Schitt's Creek.
Did you really?
Yes, and I'm wiped.
Really?
I gotta say, yeah, absolutely.
Aye.
I'm wiped.
It's a number two town in the nation. Outside of town, there's a dump.
Oh, yeah. Well, there was all.
Well,
snakes.
You take a dump right outside.
You're saying there's a town dump, by the way.
Yeah, you do. There's a town dump right there.
Oh, yeah. No, St. Patrick's, he flushed all the snakes out
did
of there.
Did he really? Absolutely. Did he really there?
He certainly did.
Manly, yes. But I like it too.
Okay, well, I sincerely hope your St. Patrick's Day is funnier and better than those two, really.
Isn't, you know that the Irish accent is one of the, I think it's one of the more difficult ones to imitate. That's such a fine line to getting it right and then just sounding like a complete idiot.
Well, that's the same reason I don't watch any BBC channel.
Well,
I really just don't like any of the British accents. I know I feel like I'm horrible, but I really can't stand it.
So you've never watched Downton Abbey?
No.
Should we get into the news? No. This conversation is going to no good place.
I don't understand
let's get
Graham Norton, Top Gear, you name it, never.
I don't understand why we hang out with you.
We actually don't. We're forced to. We come here and he's here. It's one of those things.
I'm like an STD. I'm like syphilis. Can get a cream, but you'll never get rid of. Why did I liken myself to syphilis? Anyway,
okay.
Let's go.
All right.
Anyway,
so
we need some news today, Mabs.
So you know how the innovators in the tech space are constantly trying to come up with a better system that eliminates the use of passwords, right? Because passwords are a pain in the backside. They say that you should be changing them every 4 months or so. Sometimes passwords just require too much of you. Caps, number sequence, a drop of your blood. It's just insane. So Amazon are the latest organization to look towards using selfies as your login or your password. So they're looking at allowing their online shoppers to pay with a selfie. The online retailer has filed a patent application for the technology, saying that it is more secure and less awkward than traditional passwords. I don't know what they mean by awkward, but okay. Customers would be able to take a picture or film a video of themselves to authenticate payments instead of typing in a password. So they're also thinking about cybercrime, right? Because as soon as somebody who's got nefarious ideas has your password, they could do all sorts of damage. So Amazon's facial recognition system would ensure it's the actual customer and not hackers, thieves, or kids using a person's device who is making the purchase. The process would replace passwords in the same way that a thumbprint replaces putting in a PIN code on your phone. To double check that the image is a legitimate selfie of a living human being instead of just a scan of a previously taken photo, the system would also require that the user blink, smile, or tilt your head when taking the picture.
Well, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Because it's difficult to do that if you've got a gun in your back and you're being forced to do this. That's the next thing, right?
Yeah, that's like, what I was thinking of as well.
Yeah, right, I'm just going to take you to the shop and you're going to buy this for me.
Yes.
Because remember with like thumb verification and they said maybe that would be the whole new way to get your money out of an ATM. I was like, well, in South Africa, they will be like chopping off thumbs if that's the case.
Yeah, or gouging out your eye for the retina recognition.
Oh, no.
Right. MasterCard have recently launched selfie and fingerprint payments based on similar principle. Also, Windows 10 allows people to log into their PCs using the facial scan technology. But I mean, it looks like more and more companies are looking to facial scan technology as a way of, you know, implementing it in how you use their products. I mean, as long as nobody's holding a gun to my head, I'm okay with that. Or chopping off my fingers, slicing off my face, like in the movie Face Off. Do you remember that movie, Face Off? John Travolta
and Nicolas Cage.
Yeah.
They should do like voice activation. So you go put your card into the ATM and they're like, would you like to withdraw R1,000? Yes, I would like to. And then it's like, voice activation complete.
Yeah, then the person behind you is hearing how much you're drawing and then like...
That's not going to work, Flex.
That's what I'm
scared of. It's not foolproof, but it's an idea.
Also, what happens when you've got a cold and your voice sounds completely, you know, you sound like a man? Because that's what happens.
Okay, we're going to have to scrap my idea.
Or you can record someone's voice and then just use it. See? Yeah. Well, at least selfies are finally changing the world.
I bet you it will come to a day where, like, you'll spit onto the machine and then it will do a DNA analysis and it'll prove it's you and then you'll get your money.
I hope we don't get to that point.
Okay, well, speaking of changing the world, the Pope is joining Instagram. And for some reason, this is newsworthy and it's big.
Guys.
What are you thinking, Sia? Are you already picturing images of the Pope in his hat?
I'm seeing the Pope taking selfies in and his, why?
Yeah,
no.
Yeah, yeah. That's what it's about, Sia. Because, you know, there's this thing with the Catholic Church where they're all about getting the message to as many believers and non-believers as possible. And they're specifically targeting the young. Oh, it just sounds so dodgy when you say
yes,
the Catholic Church targeting the young.
And they've been doing it for a long time. Very long
but
time.
They are specifically targeting the younger generation. And they think that the way to do this is through, you know, platforms such as Instagram, which is why the Pope is going to be joining. On Saturday is when he will join and go live. He has chosen the handle Franciscus. He is already on Twitter. He is at Pontifex on Twitter. That's his handle. Apparently, the Pope tweets in 9 different languages. How's that? Including Latin. His English account is followed by nearly 9 million people, and his Spanish account is followed by 11 million people. So I can see you laughing here, Sia, but I think Franciscus on Instagram is going to have millions and millions of followers with hundreds and thousands of likes whenever he puts up a picture of one of his famous hats or whatever it is that they call them, the stuff
well,
that he
what
wears.
I was thinking, like, what would he post?
Well, he'll be single-handedly bringing back hashtag blessed. That's
well,
true.
Well, the thing is, the Pope met with the CEO and co-founder of Instagram, right? This all happened last month. He met him at the Vatican. And the CEO of Instagram goes on to say that they were discussing the power of images to unite people across different cultures and languages. So that already gives you an idea of the kind of stuff that you can expect from the Pope's Instagram account. I mean, for them, it's purely marketing strategic tool, you know, to try and get more believers and non-believers.
Okay, I'm dying to see what the first post is going to be, because it's always like an epic one. Like, remember when Caitlyn Jenner came on Twitter for the first time? It's always like an, or Obama, epic one.
It has to be all the gold, and it's just, I'm rich. That would be the best way for the Pope to come onto Twitter.
Or like him standing at the top of one of the buildings and going like, I love my city.
Michael, he will not be the Rio de Janeiro statue standing over. That's your vibe, I can see.
Or there's a different color smoke that comes out of the Vatican to show that on Instagram, and that's the first pic.
You know, the new Pope comes in. You see that.
Or it can be like a picture with another celebrity, maybe Leonardo DiCaprio.
Or a whole bunch of choir boys, hashtag spring break.
No. No, you took it there. You had to take it there. Okay, so then I guess it will be a lot of interest then. Franciscus. What, Sia, you have a problem with the Pope being on Instagram?
Yes.
Well, guess what? Nobody cares.
Well, true.
Is this
damn
like
it.
You saying Michelle Obama can't be sexy again? Mm. You know, you're very old-fashioned, Sia.
Yeah.
I think I'm very old-fashioned. You know what? I'll accept that. Yes.
Michelle Obama is quite sexy.
Yeah, but Sia doesn't think that she should be sexy because he thinks it's inappropriate for a first lady to be anything but dowdy and uptight.
I'm just glad there are certain people who agree with me, so I don't feel alone, so
just,
it's fine.
Just getting back to these saintly figures, Tsele said something on Twitter saying that Mother Teresa lost it for me when she said abortion is the greatest problem the world faces today at the UN General Assembly. That's a minus saint tick. But then again, like, the Pope's all about don't use condoms.
Oh, yeah. The Catholic Church.
But then he went and he took that back and he said, let's use condoms, no?
Only, if, I think, during some outbreak of a disease.
It was the Zika virus because there was...
Okay, there we go.
There was an organization that appealed to the Catholic Church and they said, can we relook this no contraception usage thing, especially in the midst of an outbreak of a virus that leads to babies being born with defects? And then the church came back and they said, okay, you
so
can use
now
condoms.
Okay. You can let better judgment take control.
Yeah.
You just never win.
No.
You absolutely will just never win. I don't know.
Right. What else we got, Babs?
Oh, okay. So this is a little bit bizarre. There is a police department in Massachusetts that has gotten into the news for all the wrong reasons. This was after they went onto their Facebook post to warn their community about a suspicious rap battle that was about to take place.
Michael against someone else.
Please keep away from the thugs on North Street.
Oh my gosh.
If the artist's name was like White Chocolate or something, then I'm done.
I don't know who the artists involved are. But Charlton Police Chief James Pevier told the media that the incident really wasn't that much of a laughing matter. And this is after people saw this first Facebook post and it just ripped the police department to shreds, you know? So he said, no, this is not a laughing matter. He cited details that did not appear in the original notice. The police department posted earlier this week that two or three males, this is the actual post, two or three males in their late teens and early 20s had pulled over to a challenge. Rather to challenge a group of younger teens to a rap battle, asking them to spit bars. When the younger boys declined, the older ones drove away. And the police thought, this is reason enough to warn the community that there's a rap battle looming. What is going on?
They're probably like 14-year-old kids.
Yes, they're teenagers.
But more than that, the police are using terminology like spit bars.
Yes, they actually did, Sia. They thought that they could do that.
I'm done with the world,
what did
actually.
What they expect? Like a riot or something to happen there?
8 Mile, that's what they were expecting.
I don't know what they were expecting.
They think the next Tupac's going to like happen.
MC Milk Money.
White Chocolate versus MC Milk Money.
MC Home Before Dark.
They probably labeled it like on-street gambling.
So Facebook users called it absurd. They asked, what's next? A dance off? Ooh. Others even noted that the only real crime was open-toed sandals and told the police to reprioritize what's important. Oh, boy. Only in America, though, hey? Only in America do you get the police warning you about rap battles that are happening around
the corner.
I love
that. Just imagine an official alert from the police.
Yes.
Wow. Where did it happen? Massachusetts.
Massachusetts.
Where is that in terms of state? Are they conservative? Is that why they get riled up over things like this?
Massachusetts is a state. It is, ne?
Liberal or conservative? What sort of state?
I don't know enough in terms of where they lie. Are you asking me if they're Trump supporters or Hillary supporters? I don't know.
Well, okay. Too much to ask. True. I get that. What else is going on in the world? My phone just died on me now.
Oh, okay. So you guys... Okay, well, you probably won't remember because there's so many of these incidents that happen in America, but the Kalamazoo incident involves a man. What's this guy's name again? Jason Dalton. Jason Dalton one day decided to go on a shooting spree in Michigan. He killed a whole bunch of people and then he was arrested and then police said that they were testing, you know, his mental state and all of that. Now, this Jason Dalton guy was reluctant to talk at first because, as he told police, he didn't want to come across as a crazy person, which was mistake number one. But with a little bit of prodding, he did eventually give investigators a glimpse into what was going through his mind the day of the deadly rampage in Kalamazoo. Dalton is accused of killing 6 people and injuring 2 others in the Western Michigan city over 5 hours. And this happened on the 20th of February, in between picking up fares as an Uber driver. So here's the thing. This guy, this is his profession. He's an Uber driver. Now, he has come out and said that Uber made me do it.
Oh, gosh.
As in the... Yes, as in the famous line, the devil made me do it. Jason Dalton has told police that Uber made him kill all those people. Shortly after the shootings, he told investigators the Uber app made him like a puppet and that it would take over his whole body.
Excuse me?
Yes.
That's interesting. I got an Uber this morning and it said turn left and then it said proceed 800 meters. It didn't say turn left, kill your passenger and kill a whole bunch of other people. Maybe I just got a good ride.
Well, you know what, Ben? Maybe you're a lot more resistant than this Jason Dalton guy to the evils that Uber is apparently trying to instill in all of us. So Dalton went on to explain that when the Uber symbol, you know the little black symbol, turns to black, it literally took control over him and then it told him to get out of his car and to first... you know, to shoot all these people and injure others. And I love that this guy, initially, when police spoke to him, he said, but I don't want to come across as a crazy person, so I'm not going to talk to you. Well, Jason Dalton, it would seem that you are a crazy person because now you're blaming it on Uber and saying that Uber made you kill people.
Okay. It's a rather creative way to say I'm sorry for killing people.
No, it's not creative at all. It's stupid.
No, this guy will definitely go to jail. But I've never heard of something like this.
Yeah.
You hear like, oh, Satan took over my body or something like that. I saw premonitions. Never my Uber app told me.
Yep. Well, you know, he is an Uber driver. And he says that, you know, he just knows this Uber thing better than the rest of us do. And he says it's evil. And it took control of him. And it made him kill. So that's the latest on that story.
You know, people, when they're just not happy, they just make up all these excuses. Somewhere, somehow, this makes sense in their heads. I really don't know anymore. Another random story, which makes you lose faith in humanity as a whole. It's one thing to go through a breakup or to find out that a spouse is cheating on you. You know, you can be angry, you can cry. Some people may just buy a whole box of ice cream and just eat it in the dark room alone. Or you can just be like this young girl in a university in America. So she found out, she caught her boyfriend actually being unfaithful with another woman on campus. And so she decided, I actually want everyone on campus to know what sort of person you are. So she put up posters. You know, like when your dog is lost, for example, that's exactly what she did. So the poster says... lost dog and has 2 pictures of this boyfriend of hers. Breed of the dog, cheating psychopath mutt, and likes licking a-holes, literally, she says. Answers to put some profanities that actually blurred out so we can't even see it, but says last seen humping and the girl's name. So far the university has been trying their best to like take all of these posters down, but it's kind of too late. when the internet has gotten hold of this, they've definitely gotten hold of this. But like, I think that's kind of crazy, hey?
It's one of those things, like, you want to get revenge, but now she's tarnishing herself. Like, who wants to date the girl who went and did this?
Yeah, because it does make her come across as a little bit unstable.
Well, true. Yeah,
like, like, everyone has been in relationships that haven't gone well, right?
Yeah.
You kind of move on from that.
Yes.
You try, at least.
Yeah.
You don't then tell everyone how crap it was.
No, and...
That seems a bit crazy.
What?
She now seems like the crazy one.
Yeah, yeah. And here's the thing. I mean, I don't know about the rest of you, but I have never been so heartbroken that I have considered revenge on the person who broke my heart. And I always think to myself, because you often hear stories of women who catch their husbands cheating, the next thing you know, the husband has lost a penis.
Yes.
And I always think to myself, does it take a special kind of person to enact revenge? Or are we all capable of it? It's just a matter of you being more in control of your emotions.
I think it's, we all think it, sure.
Yeah.
But it's the fiber of who you are is how you act on it.
But when you're in the moment, sometimes you can't really control yourself. Like, I'm going to name and shame my sister's friend here. When she found out that her boyfriend was cheating on her, she waited for the boyfriend to leave for work, and she took all of, like, his left shoes and left all the right ones and left the apartment. So, like, that's just being, like, really, really scornful and hateful. What are you exactly going to... What's the guy meant to do now?
I think a good one is you catch them in the act on video, but you act like the calm one. So you walk up into the bedroom, you catch your husband with another girl in bed, and you start saying, "We have kids together. I can't believe you'd do that to me. I'm appalled. I thought better of you." And then you upload it to YouTube.
Michael, that's when you can get, like, charges.
No, you can't.
Michael, that's no different to what this girl did when she put up posters all over her
university. No, this was like a crazy one. You got to still act like you did nothing wrong. You're still sane.
Well, if they're naked, then...
Like, he hurt you, and you want the world to know that there are cheaters out there, and try look for a man that isn't a cheater like him.
If only everyone thought that way, then.
Yep. Okay, you know what? I think now would be a good place to wrap it up, because I do see there's a lot of activity happening outside the studio, and that's for the open book coming up with Luisa Bala next. And the questions being asked and answered today is, why do we eat Easter eggs, and what is the relevance of that bunny where we know that bunnies don't actually lay eggs? So this is what Loyiso and his guests will be discussing this morning. We're going to find out the truth about Easter. He's got a person from the South African Pagan Council joining us. We've got the lead pastor at Grace Point Church in Lone Hill. We've got the worship pastor of the Bryanston Bible Church also. So it's going to be an interesting one. And then for the rest of the day, the open book will be followed by the Renegade Report at 10. At 11 o'clock is Black Life. At 12 is Unplugged and In Charge, formerly known as The Gentleman by Choice. 1 o'clock will be the Fashion Lab with a very sassy and fashionable team of the Fashion Lab. That's Liz Ogumbo-Regisford and Morwick Peterson. 2 p.m. we've got Future CEOs with Gareth Armstrong and Lubin Boya. Then it's The Q with Mark Bland between 3 and 4. And then, as always, Kalman on Cliff Central wrapping up your day in terms of your Thursday lineup.
Yep. So that's that. Today is, of course, St. Paddy's Day. I'll leave you with a couple of stats. 51.2% of Americans plan to celebrate this day. 82.1% of those will dress up in green. Yeah, very, 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 very festive. About $4.4 billion will be spent today. $35.4 is the average spend for a St. Paddy's Day drunkard.
Yep.
11% of Americans are planning an actual St. Patrick's Day holiday.
Oh, as in
70, yeah,
taking time off from work and everything
to celebrate St. Patrick's Day.
11%.
11%, yeah.
Okay, all right.
70% increase of cabbage shipments will take place during this week. 13 million pints of Guinness will be consumed worldwide today. So if you're going to have one, you're one of 13 million pints. Wow. 100 different St. Patrick's Day Hallmark cards are available just for today. So this is like an annual thing. It's crazy, huh? St. Patrick's Day ranks fourth among the calendar's most popular drinking days behind New Year's Eve, Christmas, and 4th of July. Fourth. I thought it would have beaten 4th of July. But hey, that's it. 266 driving drunk collisions, casualties,
oh, wow, of course,
will basically happen. They have happened during the holiday period of 2010-2014. 75% of fatal St. Patrick's Day car crashes involve a driver who's consumed double the alcohol limit. So it's a good day and it's a tough day. So be safe.
The only statistic missing there is the number of liver transplants that will be needed after it, basically.
Yeah, so that's just St. Patrick's Day. Have fun. Wear green. And we'll catch back tomorrow with being Friday. Hooray.
CliffCentral.com.